People around the world marked the third wretched anniversary of George Bush's war against the people of Iraq Saturday by taking to the streets. As many as 100,000 people showed up in London to demand that the United Kingdom remove its troops from Bush's illegal war. Protests were also held in Baghdad, Basra, New York, Toronto, Tokyo, Rome, Madrid, and Sydney. Bush says if he had it to do all over again, he'd still attack Iraq on false pretenses. In his weekly radio address Saturday, Bush restated the same old song and dance.
The decision by the United States and our coalition partners to remove Saddam Hussein from power was a difficult decision, and it was the right decision. America and the world are safer today without Saddam Hussein in power. He is no longer oppressing the Iraqi people, sponsoring terror, and threatening the world.
Of course, way back in 2001, Saddam was no colon handpicked Secretary of State said so.
He has not developed any significant capability with respect to weapons of mass destruction. He is unable to project conventional power against his neighbors.
Despite Bush's happy talk, the civil war continues unabated in Iraq. The bodies of 22 human beings were found in and around Baghdad. They had been shot in the head. Many showed signs of torture. More than 100,000 civilians, most of them women and children, have died because of George Bush. Three more American mothers' sons also died in Iraq Saturday. The soldiers were killed near Tikrit. Two were killed in an indirect fire attack. The third was shot. With Bush's poll numbers continuing to plummet, the White House ratcheted up the fear factor again Saturday. Following the failure of Thursday's hot dog of doom scheme, cabinet secretaries held a fantasy meeting that pretended some evildoer had unleashed smallpox in the United States. Low-level cabinet secretaries spent 4 hours in a meeting at the Eisenhower office building to see what they would do if such an attack was to take place. A White House spokesman later admitted there is no evidence that any such attack is likely to happen. U.S. Navy vessels skirmished with suspected pirates on Saturday. The cruiser and destroyer exchanged gunfire with small boats off the Somali coast, a region known for piracy. Working people in France are flexing their muscles. A new law that will make it easier to fire younger workers is drawing the anger of the French working class. As usual, the government has called out police to quell student and union demonstrations against the new rules. The demonstrations all across France have succeeded in shutting down two-thirds of the country's universities. This is News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Lots of experts talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. How you doing? I'm John Prine. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math or their English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. There you'll find kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff such as fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy, just waiting to be explored by young minds. So don't let it go to waste. Support your school music program. Thank you.
A PSA brought to you by MEMC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
It's time for another phony baloney journalist story from the Bush administration. The Washington Post reported Saturday that the White House says it is disciplining two people for pretending to be reporters in advance of a presidential visit to the Gulf Coast. The two people questioned a Mississippi couple about the destruction of their home, telling the people they were from Fox News. The pair later told Elaine and Jerry Akins that they were really Secret Service agents. The Secret Service has said they were phony agents, too. Condoleezza Rice is traveling again. This time, the Secretary of State is in Pago Pago in the American Samoas. America's fashion plate diplomat is trying to strong-arm the Japanese into lifting their ban on U.S. beef. The Japanese government instituted that ban following the discovery of mad cow disease in the U.S. Another case of mad cow was reported in Alabama just last week. In addition, the USDA has announced plans to reduce the number of cows tested for the disease. The Japanese government is especially nervous because an American company negligently shipped bovine spinal material in a batch of meat to Japan this past January. Ireland's prime minister doesn't like torture. Bertie Ahern used a St. Patrick's Day visit with George Bush to drive that message home. Ahern told Bush Friday that he has, quote, concern about CIA flights, unquote, that may have gone through Irish airspace or originated in Ireland. The CIA has used secret flights to and from a number of European countries to take suspects to and from its secret torture centers. The fashion world is in mourning. Oleg Cassini, one of the giants of haute couture, died Saturday. Cassini came to America in 1936, designed costumes for Hollywood, and eventually helped craft the image of First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy. Oleg Cassini was 92 years old. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Righty, good day and welcome to this week's Fourth Estate Radio. My name is John Fox here in Sydney, Australia, and on the other side of the planet is my best mate, Bruce Birch. How you going, Bruce?
I'm doing fantastic. I got a got a wee bit of a cold tonight, but we're gonna struggle our way through it, my friend. It's been a heck of a week. I mean, we have seen an amazing amount of stuff this week, including worldwide protests today, John. Fantastic stuff.
Ah, yeah, man. We were downtown in Sydney for ours, and we kind of just by the grace of good luck of where we are on the planet, we're normally one of the first places to take part in these little worldwide events. And I'll tell you, what went downtown in Sydney yesterday was great. I've got some audio. I met a really, really great rapper that we're probably going to have on the show next week who's going to explain the Stolen Generation to us in a way that I couldn't dream of and couldn't even compete with, but we'll get to a lot of that stuff later. My head's still spinning, man. You know, it was a huge week last week. You know, we had the whole Robert Fisk interview and then the lecture afterwards, which was heavy. You had that great guest on the civil rights movement last week and everything. I mean, it was just, I'm still spinning from that, but yet the machine spins ever faster.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? What a great show, and I understand tonight you have another guest on that's going to be on Fourth Estate with us tonight, isn't that right?
Yeah, actually, Rodrigo Acuna, who I was expecting to already have here having a cup of coffee, but I reckon he's in transit, and he should be here in time for our second half hour. This gentleman did his doctoral thesis on Latin American history and actually met Hugo Chavez.
Oh, cool.
And he's going to come in, and I've been reading through and skimming through, because I've just, as we talked about, it's been pretty crazy the last few weeks. You know, I've been skimming through this thesis of his, which won him honors, that, you know, one of the things we've always tried to do with this show is try and bring the stories that aren't normally reported or underreported or slanted in such a way that we never really know what's going on. So I'm really hoping what Rodrigo's going to come in and we're just going to let him tell us what's happening down there, because none of us have been there.
Yeah, and actually what's happening right now in South and Central America is really quite revolutionary.
Ah, and it's Latin America. Let me please make that clear. I've been corrected a couple of times, and I knew this already. But to be fair, the true terminology for the region is Latin America. And okay. I think this is something where it's just the rest of us don't understand the semantics of the language enough to appreciate probably what that really means.
Okay.
So anyway, not to get all heavy, but I just I've been corrected a couple times recently because I've been in these circles with Rodrigo and some of his mates who have, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing what we don't know. And how what seems to be active democracy and self-representation is being very possibly, well, we know, not just possibly, but is being portrayed as something, you know, much different.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's Dane Punchon.
Yeah.
You know, and this, you know, in the past, see the past states right now, excuse me, are scared of true democracy because true democracy to them would be, you know, they'd lose their jobs and you know, and you and people like you and I would be sitting in power.
No doubt.
And I want to say I think it was Bolivia, isn't that correct? Bolivia, Evo Morales.
Yes, sir.
We covered this not long ago, and actually last week we talked about the fact that he gave Condoleezza Rice a guitar with an inlaid coca leaf in it. You know? That, and this is the kind of sense of humor that working people have, right?
And you know, the irony of it all, I just think is something else. But, you know, we're going to spend a lot of time on this, so I think we should actually move on. And I do believe Rodrigo's just pulled up to our Sydney studio. So he'll get a cup of coffee and get relaxed, and we'll get him in here a little bit later. But, Bruce, you had, what was that story you sent me right before we went on that you wanted to get onto?
Well, you know, we have in the last few shows we've talked about several stories, and the one that I wanted to talk about a little bit tonight is going back to a story that happened in Florida. I want to say about maybe close to a month ago, and that is there was a teen who was who was murdered. He was given a death sentence for I think a thievery charge at a Florida boot camp, and apparently yesterday, a pathologist, Dr. Michael Baden, who observed the second autopsy performed on 14-year-old Martin Lee Anderson on Monday in Tampa, says that the teen likely died from suffocation. And if anyone has watched the video of this,
I haven't seen this yet, but I'm watching it a little bit now.
The video of this, of what happened to him, you know, is very readily apparent. I mean, there were sheriff's deputies that had their knees and his back, had him face down into the ground, you know, and finally he expired. I mean, you know, and actually there was a guard that was seen even holding his hand over the boy's mouth.
Mate, no. Okay, sorry, it took me a minute to lock in just because Rodrigo just rocked up and we were just saying hello and whatnot, but I just saw, we just watched a documentary on these boot camps just this past week, and what is done to these guys by the will of their parents and then by the denial of, real, you know, wanting to accept what's going on under, you know, there's some really, really, what is going on here, man?
Well, you know, it's a matter of the, you know, the fact that people, you know, they're always looked at, you know, in the criminal justice system, there's always a swing between, you know, heavy punishment and corrective, you know, punishment, meaning that, you know, there's always a swing between someone being in solitary confinement or, you know, having programs within the prison system or within the jail system to help them become reacclimated to society and find a different way to, you know, to live. Now, in this situation, you know, these boot camps that have, you know, they've been around for a long time, and every year you hear something like this happening. I reckon it's time myself that the ACLU or somebody weigh in on this and push for these you know, for these, for a federal law for these to get shut down nationwide. Because these kids are formative. You know, they're not even adults yet, and they're being treated and beaten like as if they were full-grown adults, and they're not.
Well, yeah, and from what I got off of this documentary, you know, a lot of these, you know, boot camps and whatnot are run outside of, you know, legal, state legal jurisdiction somehow. And so how can they possibly be a legal education facility? You know, I don't understand how these places are allowed to actually get away with this.
But this was, this was actually
absolutely oversight.
Yeah, this was actually within, these were actual sheriff's deputies. This was not a private camp. This was actually
deputies.
Right. These were actual county, Bay County deputies that that did this. So this was not like a privatized kind of situation.
Okay. Right.
You know, and you know, God knows these kids. You know, absolutely, they're not angels in any stretch of the imagination. But then again, you know, no one deserves death for, you know, for some sort of, you know, just the way that they're treated in there virtually assures that they're going to have, you know, a criminal lifestyle for the rest of their lives. They're being taught by these prison guards that authority is inherently evil.
Absolutely.
So, but I do know, John, we got a couple of interesting occurrences that are going to happen this week. Now, later on tonight, I've got a Bruce's Bruising that's pretty hot. I think you listened to
yes,
it.
Yes. I did have a listen. I was just about to say we have not done the housekeeping yet.
But we'll go ahead and do the housekeeping. I hand you the broom.
Well, as usual, as we get ready to wrap up the show, as usual, we have a very mighty Bruce's Bruising. It's quite thought provoking, and you know, we're as usual blogging at fourthestateradio.com. Gail's going to be getting up the show post here shortly. We're chatting at the TomHartmann.com chat room. Just follow the chat links. Come on in and join the conversation, which I always miss out on during the show because it distracts me too much. And the White Rose Society, of course, handles all our streaming and all our archiving. And as usual, Ben Birch is having a fundraiser, so please chip in. Anyway, oh, wow, first break, man. I guess it's coming up on 17 or 18 minutes past the hour, and you're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. I'm John Fox. He's Bruce Birch, and we'll be back after this.
Hi, this is Guy James. Remember me? As many of you know, I got the boot from the radio stations that carried my show a while back because I got a little too controversial for them to handle. Well, I'm back now, but I'll be doing my show 5 days a week from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time starting on March 20th. You can join us at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org. And if you like hard-hitting, thought-provoking, entertaining radio, then join us starting March 20th at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org for the new Guy James Show.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chuck.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not the same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas
and Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the gall, the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a, you know, a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts. The issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
You're back on Fourth Estate Radio. My name is Bruce Birch, and down under, my good friend John Fox, I believe, has a guest in studio with us tonight. Go ahead, John.
Well, do we want to just go kicking into this already? Do we? Why wait? Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you, Mr. Rodrigo Acuna. Am I saying that right?
Yes, Acuna.
Yeah, go ahead and make love to that mic for us there, man.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I'm getting you there. And so anyway, I actually had a plan set up for this, but they've just kind of like sent me a left turn here. Thanks, Bruce.
Sorry. That's right. You know, I just now remembered. I'm sorry. Go ahead, John. I apologize.
No. It's all right. I'll find this quote, because there was this quote from Chavez that I wanted to read, and I didn't get there. But here's the deal. You actually have been on the ground. You went. You went and did your doctoral thesis on Latin American history?
Honest thesis in Latin American history and politics.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more.
Well, I was in Venezuela last year for approximately 2 months. My thesis looked at the Chavez government's poverty reduction programs. And I focused in particular on the aspects of health and education. Obviously, I also looked at what's happening with the oil business in Venezuela.
Well, that's the big issue, isn't it?
It's a very big issue.
Okay, so now all we ever hear is all this kind of very, very boring, what we consider boring right-wing kind of garbage that is constantly trying to equate these Latin American leaders as socialist nut jobs, leftist revolutionaries of another era, all these other things. But actually, it's not really about that. It's about the fact that for the first time in a long time, this area of the world is actually governing themselves. Am I at least getting part of it?
That's pretty much correct. I think you have to understand that the current leaders in Latin America have been elected as a response to probably 20 years of neoliberal policies, which have had catastrophic consequences on the general population. Venezuela is a very good example of that.
Well, the policies that he instated are called the missions. Is that not correct, the translation?
That's correct, the missions.
Tell us about the missions. This would probably give us a real insight to, on, you know, if you were an actual citizen of this population, finally having someone that represents them.
Well, the missions came about initially after a Hurricane Vargas, I think it was in late 1999. And the Chavez government originally decided, well, we're going to help out these people, we're going to rebuild their homes. So they sent in members of the military to rebuild housing and basic infrastructure. But from that, the government decided to utilize the military to put in place just general programs that the population has been going without for many, many years. I mean, just basic stuff like having a doctor in your neighborhood. And the reason why the Venezuelan government has been using the military is, well, first of all, you have to understand Chavez is a military leader. He comes from the military.
Right, and we don't actually hear anything about that. You know, they kind of, at least this is all I kind of ever get off of the news sources that I don't trust very much, that, you know, he's just kind of like he's come from the sticks or something, you know, and you never hear that he's actually a military leader, except I hear very little of it.
No. In fact, what's remarkably interesting about Chavez is that he can be placed into a very small but nonetheless an influential history of left-wing or nationalist military leaders in Latin America.
Right.
They have generally been obviously a minority, but Chavez was organizing for approximately 10 years in the military because they were just basically sick and tired of being utilized by, you know, the School of the Americas, et cetera, to repress their own people. Venezuela has been, well, supposedly a democracy since the fall of the brutal dictator Perez Jimenez in 1958, but it's been pretty much a two-state party, and you know two political parties which basically represent the elites of the country.
Right. Kind of sounds like a couple of countries we're closer to. You know, you have two parties kind of playing a game, and the people are left out in the cold.
That's basically it.
Now. Kind of moving. I don't really want to spread out too wide. And by the way, anyone who wants to get in on the conversation can dial in by calling in the United States 1-877-4-HEAD-ON and give it until we get through this section, probably this little bit here, and ring up with any questions that you've got. Because all of us here that have never been there and actually understand how easy it is to remove things from the media in certain places and not actually get a full story and leave the whole thing very vague, which makes it very easy to have your own government go and do something really, really crazy and get away with it. Now, this is only the start of what's happening in Latin America, right? We now actually have seen moving on into Chile, other more representational leaders. How do you see the groundswell developing?
Well, I think, as I said, you have to understand that these leaders in Latin America are a response to 20, 30 years of neoliberal policies in the region, which have had catastrophic consequences on the general population. You also have to remember that in the 1960s and 70s, you had governments which were elected to power. Although some of them had, you know, sort of very revolutionary rhetoric, but really they were social democratic, and just, you know, basically stating, look, we think that the general population ought to have a greater input into the way society is run, the way economic policies are structured, et cetera, et cetera. Now, how that was the response, of various business communities in Latin America and particularly, of course, the United States, was just to bring in the military. You know, so you had the coup in Chile, you had a military coup in Argentina, in Uruguay, Brazil, etc. And now many of the current leaders in Latin America are either the sons of, you know, those activists of the 60s and 70s, And again, are taking up a sort of similar call to say, look, you know, we think that the majority of the population ought to have a say in the way society's run.
Well, and it, to me, that seems like a completely reasonable expectation when your government is supposed to be representing we the people and it is using we the people's taxes to then employ a policy that is being done in the name of we the people. And so I am very, very heartened by what I'm seeing, because I don't care who's doing it. I don't care what kind of label you stick on it. Representative democracy that works for the betterment of a population, to me, is a good idea. And as opposed to, and this is where the oil game comes, and I think I might want to pull back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Mr. Chavez has been doing has been selling cheap heating oil.
To the U.S.
Yeah. Not only to the U.S., but to his neighbors and whatnot. What other kind of, you know, very humanitarian kind of moves is he doing as outreach programs outside of his own nation? Because, I mean, this is big.
Well, I mean, PDVSA was a state run oil company. It was set up in the 1976, when oil was actually nationalized in Venezuela. But until the Chavez government, the state-run oil industry was basically, you know, just used for government bureaucrats and the upper echelons of society. I mean, they're running huge, huge scams.
Right.
When the Chavez government was elected, it basically said, look, this is going to come to an end. We're going to use the oil for the majority of the population. We're going to utilize that huge natural resource, and we're going to, you know, we're going to create hospitals, we're going to create schools, the missions.
We're not going to depend on business to do this for us. We're not, you know.
Exactly. With that, not only has there been a radical restructuring of the way that mass resource is used internally, but Chavez has been very, very intelligent in understanding that that resource can be used to forge Latin American unity. Which you have to understand is many countries in Latin America historically have, because of, you know, the way Latin America was founded as a colony of Spain, you know, you have countries like say Chile. You know, what's the primary resource in Chile? It's copper. What happens with copper? Sold to the United States, mostly sold to Europe. It's manufactured over there and it's sold back to Chile as manufactured products. Now, you know, from a Chilean or wider Latin American perspective, you tend to think that there's something wrong with that relationship.
Absolutely.
You know? And many Latin Americans have been stating for quite a while. I mean, this goes back to, you know, Simón Bolívar, been stating, look, you know, as individual nations, we're just too weak to be able to negotiate with the United States, with Europe, on equitable terms. You know, we don't. I mean, Chavez has many times been labeled as anti-American. I mean, that's just, first of all, that's just ridiculous. Chavez has quite openly, on many occasions, stated that, you know, he's more than happy to have friendly relations with the United States, with Europe, etc. But it has to be on terms which Venezuelans find, you know, that are fairer.
There's a bit more balance.
Exactly.
From having a really, really general pass through your thesis,
mm-hmm.
it's not like all the profits are actually going into these programs. There's actually, what is it, somewhere around 1/3 to 40% or something that's actually being taken off the top for the missions programs, and the rest is actually going to the oil company profits? Am I kind of getting that?
Yes. A significant amount is going into the social programs. Other amounts are going into supporting various Latin American countries. For example, Argentina, Venezuela is paying off a considerable part of Argentina's debt. Chavez is setting up, the Venezuelan government is setting up Petrocaribe,
mm-hmm.
Which is the idea of forging a sort of a state, by state run oil company in the Caribbean area. It just goes on and on and on and on. They realize that They have this incredible resource, and they have to use it to forge wider Latin American unity and to use this money to support the general population. So now, for example, they're talking about setting up a school of medicine in Venezuela, and they will provide scholarships for people throughout Latin America of, you know, working class, peasant backgrounds, to come to Venezuela to study and then go back to their own countries and work as doctors. Morales is having similar programs. There are approximately something like 20,000 Cuban doctors in Venezuela, roughly the same amount of teachers. It's incredible. It's really
it all just sounds so reasonable. This is why, right? This all just sounds so absolutely
and
reasonable.
And that's why he's considered such a problem. Exactly.
Okay, now, you know, he's helping to pay off Argentina's debt, and now you're looking at you know, the stirrings of a financial block being created. And it was Noam Chomsky wrote a piece this week about the shifting blocks. And I was just saying, Bruce...
It's very interesting. I read it to me.
Bruce, do you remember, was it last week or the week before that I was talking about Tom Hartman, talking about how the Chinese, when they're looking at the financial blocks, you know, almost a century down the line, that the actual North Americas don't even exist in the game.
Yeah, that's right. Looking out into the future, they're not even in the, you know, we're not even being considered.
So, you know, and what could be interesting, because, I mean, we really are, the United States is, I mean, financially, the economic system is running on vapors at the moment. You know, it's we don't know what the war is costing because they won't make that public, right? And it doesn't actually go on budgets. So, as we know in the current world that we live in, a lot of national policy when it comes to labor, all these different things, is very much influenced by the international corporate interests which are driven out of the United States, right? We can't avoid that. So, you know, the European nations got together and said, hey, we're going to create this European Union, set up a currency, and check it out. Suddenly, we have this thing and this buying power that's somewhat equal. You know, certain people have had their problems with it. The English still aren't using the euro, which I find an interesting little thing that they're able to slip out of. But, I mean, these are the deals that one makes. So it really, I wonder how much fear this strikes into the heart of certain world leaders, namely George W. Bush, the fact that there's some organization and actual investments, because power is in the people. We have seen this through history, right? The true power is when the people get together and show their voice. That's when they can move mountains. And I think that this is what they're fearing.
Well, I mean, you know, the biggest threat of Venezuela from Washington's perspective, I think, is the threat of a good example. The threat that many people in the United States might look towards Venezuela, to places like Bolivia, and say, well, hey, you know, we think we ought to have a say in the way our country is run, in the way our economic structure is run, and that's why it's contagious. In the 1980s, you had the Sandinista Revolution in Nicaragua. That was basically destroyed. That was destroyed through the U.S. funding the Contras.
Illegally.
Illegally, exactly.
The same guys are working for the Bush administration.
Exactly, pretty much the same people. from Venezuela's perspective, they are very, very afraid of that. They're very worried. And that's why recently, I think you asked me, John, about what's happening with the popular militia that they're trying to create, and that's the reason for that is because from Venezuela's perspective, they think that the U.S. might decide to fund paramilitaries in Colombia and go into Venezuela and start causing havoc. When they did that in Nicaragua, it was very interesting because most of the time they wouldn't actually fight the Sandinistas; they would actually go in and kill doctors, school teachers, women, children, Venezuelan leaders are aware of that, and they're afraid. They're worried. They're very worried.
I would reckon that they are. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I can't remember if I sent it to you or you sent it to me, but there was that article about Chavez working up some local small defense forces using some older technology. I think, first of all, you know, there's a David and Goliath thing going on here. And I could very, very much see a mess if the United States ever decided to do something in a military option there.
The Bush administration, I think, is in a difficult position from their perspective, because on the one hand, they know that the overwhelming majority of Venezuelans support the Chavez government. In particular, women, actually, the support amongst women is amazing. And they know that most Venezuelans will, as was displayed during the 2002 coup, are willing to take to the streets to defend their government, because they see, you know, Chavez as a part of them. I mean, to begin with, you know, 80% of the Venezuelan population is Indio y Negro. That's Indian and black.
Right.
Indian and African. And that's, you know, Chavez represents that section of which is the majority of the population. So, to get back to your original question, I think the United States is in a difficult position, because it knows that this won't be a walkover. You know, this won't be an Iraq job where they can just go in and, you know, Saddam was a brutal dictator, and, you know, many people, the majority of Iraqis didn't
but they were able to, they were able to starve him. They won't be able to outright starve the Latin America in the same way.
No, I don't think so. So that's a difficult position for them, because they, you know, they know that Venezuelans are prepared to fight. But on the other hand, I mean, one of the things that I mentioned to various people that I talked to in Venezuela, I said, look, I don't think you can underestimate the United States for a minute. And what I've been reading recently is that the Washington administration is dead set on disrupting the elections at the end of this year, the presidential elections at the end of this year. So.
Right. Okay, as we're passing notes around. and just to remind everybody, if you have any questions for Mr. Acuna, please dial into 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And what's the numeric version of that, Bruce? You don't like that 4-HEAD-ON thing.
It's 1-877-443-2366.
Right on. So. Well, I tell you, you know, Bob just sent me, our producer just sent in the chat room over here, mentioning that the U.S. State Department recently praised Colombia's increase in human rights.
Oh, please. where does one begin with that one?
Well,
I think it begins at the source. I mean, you know, the U.S. State Department, which is, you know, recently doing rendition, kidnappings, you know, torture, we're praising increase in human rights. Yeah. Right? Rodrigo, I mean, Negro Ponte went down to South America, Latin America, you know, back during Reagan's time, and taught them how to do death squads, isn't that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Colombia has by far the worst human rights record in Latin America at the moment. I think the figures for could be mistaken here, but I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago, there were approximately 4,000 syndicalists murdered in Colombia. You know, if you join a union, you're basically asking for a death squad to come around and kidnap you or execute you. The majority of the involvement of narco trafficking in Colombia is actually done by the paramilitaries and many members of the Colombian government. Now, that's not to say, of course, that the FARC are, you know, completely innocent or don't occasionally commit human rights violations themselves. They definitely do. But, you know, I mean, the U.S. praising Colombia for its human rights record, please.
Yeah. Rodrigo, let me ask you this. I know that we're probably heading up on a break here pretty quickly, but I did want to ask you about the Zapatistas. in Mexico. And their recent, you know, sort of mainstream movement toward, actually, I think even running a presidential candidate. Isn't that correct? Or do you know anything about what they're doing there?
I'm not 100% sure what the situation is in Mexico. I know that López Obrador is a left-wing candidate, and he will be running for the presidential elections this year. And I think if the Zapatistas are not supporting him openly, they might be sort of giving him tacit support, although I could maybe correct it on that. But in terms of Zapatistas, I mean, they find themselves in a very, very difficult situation. You have to remember that the Zapatista leaders and, but mainly the Zapatista leaders did not actually want to originally take up arms. That was actually put to a vote to the communities, and the communities originally said, well, you know, we're being kicked off our lands by local paramilitaries. NAFTA is going to be implemented, and that's just going to, you know, basically mean the death of us. So you have to understand that the original rebellion in Chiapas occurred out of just outright desperation. And since then, the Zapatista leaders have been trying to reach out to the broader international community. But they're surrounded by, I think it's approximately 80,000 troops. The United States, again, you know, being involved and training the Mexican military, which was an absolute rust bucket before that. They're in a very difficult situation.
But democracy is on the march, right?
Pardon?
I said, but democracy is on the march, right?
It was supposed to be
a sarcastic comment. It amazes me that our government, you know, will say such things as freedom's on the march and democracy is rising around the world, all the while we are crushing democracy.
In terms of Mexico, it's very interesting because the presidential candidate López Obrador was, I think, illegally incarcerated, and about a million people turned up in Mexico City to ask for his release. So, no, if the increase in democracy in Latin America is actually being driven by grassroots organizations, the U.S. has nothing to do with that.
All right, man. I got so many thoughts, but I've been asked. To ask you before we run out of time, and if I might come back and keep this going for another segment if everybody else is into that, trade links with China and Venezuelan oil, how do you see that? Is it how protective is Venezuelan oil of the trade links with China?
Venezuela, the majority of Venezuela's trade, of course, is historically with the United States. That's one of the reasons why the United States is quite unhappy with the Chavez government, because it's no longer getting the sort of cheap oil deals that it used to. And now China, now it's making... links with China. I think we're off to a song. And
So we'll pick this up on the other side of this. We're coming up on something like 47 minutes past the hour. I'm John Fox. Bruce is sitting over there trying to take it easy with a bad, 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 bad sick chest. And we'll be back on Fourth Estate Radio.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know... One small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
All right, everybody, welcome back to For the State Radio. I am John Fox in Sydney. We got about 9 or 10 minutes left in this hour, and Bruce Birch is over there in North Carolina, and we still have Rodrigo Acuna with us talking about Latin America, all kinds of stuff. And Bruce, you're still over there, man. How are you feeling?
I'm actually feeling much better now that I've had the opportunity to rest my lungs for a minute. So thank you.
Good. Good, man. Well, you know, the question that I was posing before, I kind of posed wrong. I was being passed it in a note, and I was being kind of dumb and didn't quite get it together. But I think more what the reference was is the fact that Venezuela has these ties with China, giving them any leverage or protection from a military action from the U.S.
Well, in the short run, I don't think... as I mentioned, I think it would be very difficult for the U.S. to carry out any sort of military aggression towards Venezuela. Although I wouldn't put it past them. You know, they're so radical over there in Washington. Who knows what they'll do? Venezuela is looking to increase its links with China. It's looking to increase its links with Europe. And when I was there, there was actually a trade conference with U.S. business leaders. And the message from the Chavez government was quite clear. Look, you know, we're happy to do business with you, but you have to come down here and, you know, give us a fair deal, basically.
You got to let us in on the conversation. Bruce, this kind of thing that I was originally going to open up with, we found this in... Whoops, Rodrigo's thesis, sorry, as my mic runs away. There's this thing where Chavez says, are we aiming in Venezuela today for the abolition of private property or a classless society? I do not think so, but if I'm told that because of that reality, you can't do anything to help the poor, the people who have made this country rich through their labor, and never forget that some of that was slave labor, then I say we part company. This is not the words of a radical to me.
No, it's not, and... as I've mentioned, I mean, many, if you get past the sort of, you know, the revolutionary rhetoric, much of what the Latin American left has been asking for is, you know, what you'd consider social democratic gains. They're actually quite, many of them actually quite sensible. But the local oligarchs, elites, of course, you know, the United States business community, have been almost completely unwilling to engage in any negotiations. So 20, 30 years ago, center-left government was elected into power, you just call out the military, carry out a coup. Now, many in Latin America and military are starting to realize that that's just, things aren't going to work like that from now on.
So, okay, now, what... Are you when was it that you were there?
I was there last year, between July and August, close to 2 months.
Okay, so how long had Chavez been in running things and had a chance to get things happening for his ideas?
Chavez was elected at the end of 1998 in December and came to power in early 1999.
Right.
And I mean, what I saw, wrote about it in my thesis, and hopefully go on to write about it some more later on. I mean, the changes are just enormous, enormous changes. I mean, take Mission, take the various missions in education. You've now got programs where people who had to leave high school because, you know, basically had to go out and work are now returning to school. There are various programs to get people into universities. University lecturers are complaining that they've got too many single mothers now at university. You know, it's,
and they're actually equaling something. This isn't some sort of joke. You've actually got a number of them.
No, the statistics, I don't have the precise statistics for the number of single mothers at university, but I can tell you that, I mean, over a million people have now become literate. That makes a mockery, an absolute mockery of the former government's programs. I think they managed to alphabetize about 750,000 people in 10 years. And the Chavez government has alphabetized about a million people in, what, less than 4 years.
Well, I'll tell you, man, this has actually been great. We've had almost an hour on this, and we're going to have you back. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Everybody, please, thank you, you know, Rodrigo. This has been fantastic, and we got a lot to think about, and we'll have you on soon, and we'll learn a little bit more about the world around us that we don't know, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thank you, John.
And as usual, you know, we're chatting in the old Tom Hartman chat room, and hey, Bruce, is that something else?
I'm sorry. Oh, that was fantastic. Rodrigo, thank you for joining us tonight or today or wherever you are. I'm just, you know, we do this show and it's like 14 hours difference. but I think one of the things, you know, that I found to be so interesting about this is that you don't get the perspective of the people there, you know, unless you actually talk to someone who has been there and talk to the people, because the news, you know, obviously is controlled by the corporate interests, and the corporate interests are there to exploit. So, you know, all we get to hear is basically, you know, the company line rather than, you know, what the people actually have to think. And so thank you, Rodrigo, so much for providing that perspective for us.
All right. Well, I think we're just about out of time. We're coming up on the news break and all that with our mate, Bob Kincaid, and we'll see you on the other side of the hour break. This is For the State Radio.
McGruff, the crime dog, here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write
Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time. You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Head on Radio News. I'm Bob Kincaid. People around the world marked the third wretched anniversary of George Bush's war against the people of Iraq Saturday by taking to the streets. As many as 100,000 people showed up in London to demand that the United Kingdom remove its troops from Bush's illegal war. Protests were also held in Baghdad, Basra, New York, Toronto, Tokyo, Rome, Madrid, and Sydney. Bush says if he had it to do all over again, he'd still attack Iraq on false pretenses. In his weekly radio address Saturday, Bush restated the same old song and dance.
The decision by the United States and our coalition partners to remove Saddam Hussein from power was a difficult decision, and it was the right decision. America and the world are safer today without Saddam Hussein in power. He is no longer oppressing the Iraqi people, sponsoring terror, and threatening the world.
Of course, way back in 2001, we already knew Saddam was no threat to the world. Colin Powell, Bush's own hand-picked Secretary of State, said so.
He has not developed any significant capability with respect to weapons of mass destruction. He is unable to project conventional power against his neighbors.
Despite Bush's happy talk, the civil war continues unabated in Iraq. The bodies of 22 human beings were found in and around Baghdad. They had been shot in the head. Many showed signs of torture. More than 100,000 civilians, most of them women and children, have died because of George Bush. Three more American mothers' sons also died in Iraq Saturday. The soldiers were killed near Tikrit. Two were killed in an indirect fire attack. The third was shot. With Bush's poll numbers continuing to plummet, the White House ratcheted up the fear factor again Saturday. Following the failure of Thursday's hot dog of doom scheme, cabinet secretaries held a fantasy meeting that pretended some evildoer had unleashed smallpox in the United States. Low-level cabinet secretaries spent 4 hours in a meeting at the Eisenhower office building to see what they would do if such an attack was to take place. A White House spokesman later admitted there is no evidence that any such attack is likely to happen. U.S. Navy vessels skirmished with suspected pirates on Saturday. The cruiser and destroyer exchanged gunfire with small boats off the Somali coast, a region known for piracy. Working people in France are flexing their muscles. A new law that will make it easier to fire younger workers is drawing the anger of the French working class. As usual, the government has called out police to quell student and union demonstrations against the new rules. The demonstrations all across France have succeeded in shutting down two-thirds of the country's universities. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Lots of experts talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. How you doing? I'm John Prime. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math or their English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. There you'll find kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff such as fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. So don't let it go to waste. Support your school music program. Thank you.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
It's time for another phony baloney journalist story from the Bush administration. The Washington Post reported Saturday that the White House says it is disciplining two people for pretending to be reporters in advance of a presidential visit to the Gulf Coast. The two people questioned a Mississippi couple about the destruction of their home, telling the people they were from Fox News. The pair later told Elaine and Jerry Akins that they were really Secret Service agents. The Secret Service has said they were phony agents, too. Condoleezza Rice is traveling again. This time, the Secretary of State is in Pago Pago in the American Samoas. America's fashion plate diplomat is trying to strong-arm the Japanese into lifting their ban on U.S. beef. The Japanese government instituted that ban following the discovery of mad cow disease in the U.S. Another case of mad cow was reported in Alabama just last week. In addition, the USDA has announced plans to reduce the number of cows tested for the disease. The Japanese government is especially nervous because an American company negligently shipped bovine spinal material in a batch of meat to Japan this past January. Ireland's prime minister doesn't like torture. Bertie Ahern used a St. Patrick's Day visit with George Bush to drive that message home. Ahern told Bush Friday that he has, quote, concern about CIA flights, unquote, that may have gone through Irish airspace or originated in Ireland. The CIA has used secret flights to and from a number of European countries to take suspects to and from its secret torture centers. The fashion world is in mourning. Oleg Cassini, one of the giants of haute couture, died Saturday. Cassini came to America in 1936, designed costumes for Hollywood, and eventually helped craft the image of First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy. Oleg Cassini was 92 years old. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. Here we go. We happening? You hearing me? Am I alive? Anyway, this is John Fox in Sydney. Bruce, you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
Sorry about that, man. I think we got lost in Skype hell there for a second. But anyway, it's the top of hour two. Jeez, that was one hell of a little bit of a conversation and education we had there the last 45 minutes or so of the show. What do you reckon, man?
Well, you know, we have had in the last month some very interesting guests, guests that are so far in advance of my intelligence. It's just amazing to me. I mean, I stand in awe of him. I stand in awe of Robert Fisk, Anthony Lowenstein, all these guys, man. They're just amazing. So we are very lucky to have had the opportunity to have these guys on Fourth Estate.
Well, the idea, too, is that, you know, I mean, the only way we're going to understand anything is to actually get an education in the things we don't get. And, you know, we have to, you know, we're really indebted to these people for giving us their time and their expertise and, you know, to give us a feel for what's going on the ground. And I still think that that's one of the best things that this show has slowly been able to do more and more.
Well, yeah, and it's just excellent that we're able to do that. So I wanted to, John, you want to get on to some other things tonight, or what do you?
Absolutely, man, absolutely. Okay. No. I was saying, you know, it's hour two here. You know, we're chatting over at the Tom Hartman chat room, blogging at fourthestateradio.com, and you know, do you have anything lined up at the top of your list there?
I do have something lined up, but actually, Bob talked about this in his. Fantastic newscast, and that is the fact that and this is almost, you know, again, this falls into the category of stranger than fiction. Okay, that if it wasn't in the Washington Post, I think I would just go, yeah, okay.
But apparently, you know, now we have secret servicemen that are impersonating Fox journalists in the Gulf Coast to try to scout. They were scouting locations for a presidential visit down on the Gulf Coast, and apparently a Mississippi couple whose home was destroyed by Hurricane Katrina said that these two Secret Service agents who identified themselves as Fox News journalists were surveying their neighborhood in advance of a March 8th visit from the president. They apparently arrived at the site of the home that Jerry and Elaine Akins were rebuilding in Gaudier, Mississippi. And they didn't show any cards. They just came up and said that they were with the media and that they were with Fox. And they asked this couple about rebuilding their house, et cetera, et cetera. And then later on, apparently, after everything was over with, they approached them and they were laughing and said, you know, we really weren't with Fox. We're government secret servicemen.
Did you just see what Bob typed in our little production chat? Fox News journalist, contradiction in terms.
Here's what I was going to say, you know, actually, is that, you know, the secret servicemen were impersonating Fox News journalists. Well, I think Fox News journalists actually impersonate journalists. But,
I was going to say, but wouldn't that clown?
I'm sorry?
No. I'd just say, you know, same thing. It's a clown. Anyway, please continue. I mean, you got, of all things, pick and say Fox News journalist, you know, as a cover.
You know. You know, anyone could say they're a Fox News journalist. All they have to do is go, I like the president. I'm a Fox News journalist. You know, I mean, watch the Sunday morning news. I mean, you know, on that, I hate that station. But anyway, you watch everything on there, and it's like, all they do is sit around and try to justify, you know, they're apologists for the president, which is amazing to me. But anyway, I thought that was one of those stories of stranger than fiction. You know, one of those things that we have to bring to the American public. But the funny thing is that these guys are actually getting punished by the White House for masquerading as for doing that. Why? These people won't even punish Scooter Libby. Why would they punish these two, you know, Secret Service agents for, like, you know, pretending to be Fox News journalists? I don't understand. It just makes no sense to me.
Why are they worried about first of all, what we've seen recently with how far Bush has to go in some places to find a safe place to have a photo op, you can see why they're having to do this, why they're having to do all this stuff. But, you know, I think this would be one of those times where when the Secret Service was actually dealing with the public, they'd actually kind of be like, going, hi, we're the Secret Service. You know, the president's coming to town, blah, 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 you know. You kind of almost would think that this would be one of the good moments for them to actually do some public PR. Why? Why pick a Fox News journalist? And, it would have been funnier if they said that they were from Fox News Security.
Have you been calling the Bill O'Reilly Show and talking about Keith Olbermann?
Randy Rhodes has just been going absolutely batty about that one, man. She's just going, who does this guy think he is, you know? And, like, going, Fox News Security? Exactly where's your jurisdiction, you know? I mean, please, that just sounds like an absolute, you know, just con job. I think it's a...
Of course it is, but...
I mean, who the hell are they to say, we're going to send people after yous, you know, because you disagree with one of our hosts, you know? I mean, Bill O'Reilly, what a blowhard. I mean, the guy's a complete knob. Bruce? You still
indeed
with...
he is.
Anyway.
A complete knob.
I am. Ah, you are there. Sorry, I lost you in a little bit of that thing.
The connection is getting really slow. Okay.
Probably
we need to do a
little...
reconnect there, John.
Second, but...
Okay.
Okay.
Well, yeah, the other thing... Thank you. The other thing, too, is that we have a number of different, you know, we had a bunch of rallies all around the world today, which we talked about earlier. But there was an interesting, apparently, you know, every, you know, and actually I covered it last week on All Things Reconsidered, the other show that I do. It's on Sunday nights. And that was that there was a rally in Fayetteville, North Carolina today, which was which is at the largest military installation in the state. And I think actually in the East Coast. And in this, you know, there apparently were, you know, I love how the media does this. You know, we here on Fourth Estate Radio, we call ourselves Fourth Estate Radio because, you know, there really isn't a Fourth Estate anymore, and we're, so we're trying to, you know, be that. Well, the media says, in a perfect news article that I had open earlier, is from WRAL-TV out of Raleigh, North Carolina. You know, hundreds of people showed up to this protest, and yet maybe 10 counter-protesters showed up. But guess who they give the most press to?
Oh, of course, the counter-protesters, you know, like the people pouring French wine down the drains at the beginning of the war in New York. If you actually caught the wide-angle shot of that, you know, it was only like five people with a couple of police barricades set up as a photo op with a background set up. I mean, you know, we just know, don't we?
we know.
You know, man,
you know, it's like Robert Fisk talked about last week with the whole thing with the statue set up, right? The statue set up in Baghdad. It was a total. It was completely fabricated. It was a movie set.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And most of the people involved were people that worked for a subdivision of Halliburton, from if I'm not mistaken. They were actually contractors for the U.S. And I do believe that they even strapped an American flag to Saddam's head, and then the military leaders kind of went, that might not be a real good idea. Rip that down, and let's find an old Iraqi flag, and let's stick that on his head.
Yeah, tear down the old Iraqi, you know. And see, that's just it. You know, and here's the question that I have, John, is what is it that what is the media getting out of this?
Okay, money and legislation.
I'm sorry?
Money and legislation.
Okay.
Sorry to give you a straight answer to what I think was supposed to be a rhetorical question.
Well, you know, it used to be that the media, at least the news part of the media, was a separate entity altogether that was sort of, you know, that was expected to be independent.
Well, it was also expected to be part of their public service back to the community for their use of the infrastructure for their free broadcast-to-air license, in which they basically get a license to print money. So, you know, in the fairness doctrine days, you know, when there was a fairness doctrine, and I know I differ with a few people when it comes to the idea of reintroducing the fairness doctrine, but I still think that there is a definite place for something like it, because if you're going to open up the airwaves for free to commercial operations, you need to make sure that something is being put back in to keep something like C-SPAN alive. You know, and we do know that there are moves being made. You know, already the broadcasters don't pay nearly the spit of a tax that they used to pay for, you know, where the cable was laid, all that other stuff, all the infrastructure that they use just to be able to print money by selling advertising and using the people's airwaves, just like using the people's oil for private benefit only. So the idea, this is part of the greater people, so they should actually get something out of it, especially if someone in the private sector is going to be able to just print money from it. Ranch.
That was great. We are chatting in the Tom Hartman chat room, and you can also give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. This is Fourth Estate Radio. My name is Bruce Birch, and that's John Fox. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Bruce Hornsby. You know the expression, practice makes perfect? Well, it certainly is true in music. And practicing music is one of the most valuable ways a student can spend his time, or her time. A young person who studies music reinforces teamwork, communication skills, self-discipline, and creativity. All qualities kids need to be successful in their other schoolwork. Parents, think about encouraging your kids to try out several instruments at school until they find the one that they really like, the one that really clicks for them. Get to know the school's music teacher and encourage your child to join school music ensembles. And please don't forget that your kids all have an instrument that's free and sounds wonderful. Their voices.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
If you missed last Sunday's All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch, here's some highlights. You know, stuff like that we hear about that sickens us, or that creates the kind of attitude in our thinking that is just like, we can't believe that people would actually do this. The reason why we think that is because we are basically good people and we want to help other people. We don't want to hurt other people. We want to help other people. Now, speaking for myself, this week I plan to do something to go out and help someone else. And I would strongly encourage that you do the same thing, because the only way that we're going to be able to turn this world around and to change anything is we've got to create the kind of world that we want to live in. And that means that instead of fussing about how bad things are, we've got to go out and do something good to turn it around. And if doing that something good means going and working on a Habitat house, if that's what you want to do, then by all means, please go do it. If doing something good means going down to the local homeless shelter and feeding the folks there, if doing something good means, you know, volunteering your time with some kids or going to the hospital and reading to cancer patients or whatever it might be, that's fine. But do it. Because that, by doing that, that's how we create the world that we want. That's how we create the world that we want. Join me every Sunday as we talk about how to make this world a better place. 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. That's allthingsreconsidered.org, a proud member of the Head On Radio Network.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. I am John Fox down in Sydney, Australia, where I can vaguely see the Harbour Bridge through the pollution today. How are you going up there, Bruce?
I'm going to get through it, my friend. I'm going to get through it.
You seem to be kind of going, you know, up and down and up and down and up and down. You know, as long as we don't push you too hard, you seem to come back with a hell of a run. So,
don't make me laugh. It hurts, man.
Yeah, I understand that, man. There's just been so much stuff going on, and before I forget, you can ring into the show, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON, and the number version is, Bruce?
1-877-443-2366.
Right on. It's a beautiful thing. So anyway, the Lizard Woman was in town.
Lizard Woman?
Lizard Woman was in town.
What's her name? Condoleezza Lisa Rice?
Yes, and she actually met with some protesters at one of her little official functions.
There were a few protesters?
Oh, yeah. And if you go to 12thharmonic.com, you can see some pictures of the protesters that were out for the 3-year anniversary of the occupation.
I'm doing it right now, John.
Yeah, and they got some, Gail got some really, really great shots, and I love the guy with the barcode over his mouth that says, with a little sign that says, Democracy for Sale. And the thing that you have to remember up there. And the thing you have to remember up there, America, the T-shirt that he's wearing, down here, liberals means the right wing. just so confused.
Liberals in Australia are right wing?
Yeah, Labour is the left wing. So I don't know, like, you know, okay. I don't know if that's actually something that, you know, developed as some sort of a bad joke, hoping that maybe the uneducated migrants that didn't understand the system yet would just go, oh, the Liberals, I don't know the system yet, I'll check that one. You know, I kind of wonder if that's the kind of tactics that they get to around here. But anyway, when Rice was here, we saw some video footage down at the Conservatory of Music in Sydney here, and they were chanting, Rice, Rice, go away. How many people have you tortured today? And here's a really, really, really strange thing, man. She had an escort bloody train of 17 vehicles and helicopters from her hotel in the city to the event that was in the city. Now, at the same time, the Queen of England was down in Melbourne for the Commonwealth Games, and I think she was being chauffeured around in, like, a taxi cab by comparison. And they blocked off half of downtown Sydney for the Lizard Woman. And here's where it gets really spooky. On her entrance, a string quartet, I believe it was, played an instrumental version of Foxy Lady.
I'm sorry?
They actually played a string version of Jimi Hendrix's Foxy Lady.
Oh, my God.
Now, this is getting weird. This
you
is
know,
getting
Jimi Hendrix is rolling in
really,
his grave.
Really, really weird.
God. Okay.
Well, I had to guitar start playing Foxy Lady just to feel like I was reclaiming the song for Jimmy again. And Gail actually turns to me and starts singing, instead of Foxy, she's going, Poxy!
Foxy Lady.
Maybe the possibility of a new parody of Poxy Lady. You know, I know you are a torture-loving heartbreaker. Poxy. I don't know. Might not work, but anyway, you know, it's just... Bob, actually, I sent you some audio earlier today, and if I can find my bloody list, which is down here. Hold on a second. I have my list. Bob, there's an audio clip there, I believe, called Three Stooges. And we'll do it after the break, as I'm being told that we're coming up 1 minute to the break. So just reminding everybody that, you know, you can ring into the show on 1-877-4 head on. And we're going to be talking about a whole lot of other things this afternoon here in Sydney and evening over there in America. And I've got some audio clips from the protests yesterday. And Bruce, did you hear that whole big air thing that happened a couple days ago was actually just a photo op?
I did hear that. And you know what? It doesn't surprise me. But you know something else? I'm glad it was just a photo op and not a huge air thing.
Well, because, man, you know, I was looking at that, was following on that Seymour Hersh thing, you know, about the Raising the Air campaign, you know. So there's the music, man. And we're coming up on 27 minutes past the hour. My name is John Fox. There is a slightly crook Bruce Birch over there in North Carolina. And we'll be back on the other side of the half hour. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio.
Hi, this is Guy James. Remember me? As many of you know, I got the boot from the radio stations that carried my show a while back because I got a little too controversial for them to handle. Well, I'm back now, but I'll be doing my show 5 days a week from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time starting on March 20th. You can join us at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org. And if you like hard-hitting, thought-provoking, entertaining radio, then join us starting March 20th at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org for the new Guy James Show.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering, pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving, and I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Parents, did you know that high school dropouts make 42% less than graduates? Someone will have to make up that difference, and chances are, that will be you. That means paying 42% of their groceries.
Ooh, more candy.
42% of their dentist bills.
No, no more candy.
Even 42% of their therapy sessions.
It's all my dad's fault.
Save your money. Encourage your kids to stay in school. For help and advice, call 877-FORA-KID. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Alrighty, people, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. I am John Fox here in Sydney, and that there was the Tea Party, something that's been missing from my collection for over a long, 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 long time, Bruce. I've been telling you about them for a long time. I reckon a band that American record labels have been afraid of for over a decade.
It sounded great. Why would they be afraid of them?
Well, I couldn't believe it when I first moved here. This is completely going off all the heavy subjects we've been on, but I think we need a break. Just because, my kind of somewhat past self was a touring rock and roll engineer, blah, 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 blah. And when I first moved to Australia, you know, people were listening to things that were in my collection, you know, the Stone Temple Pilots and all that kind of stuff, and going, and they heard stuff like Days of the New and said, ah, You must dig the Tea Party. And I'm going, who the hell's the Tea Party? Some new band. They're going, no, I've been out for about 10 years, you know, 7 albums at that point. I'm going, excuse me? Some Canadian trio. So finally someone brings some to me, and I'm like getting hit by this thing. I'm going, like, why have I never heard this? And it seems, as I ask around, no one in America knows who this band is, and they're from bloody Canada. The second largest fan base is down here in Australia. One of my mates does guitars for the guitar player, and he can play as many as 31 instruments on one album.
Holy moly.
And, you know, you and I share that mad affection for Michael Hedges, you know, one of the last guys that we ever knew of that played a harp guitar.
Sure.
Well, this guy does as well. That's one of many things. And like that song there was oud, there's bouzouki, there's, you know, and then plus he does all that really, really cool six-string retuning kind of stuff that you and I really, really dig, you know. And I've just never, and I finally had the opportunity to see them the last time they toured, and Gail and I went and actually worked some of the gig, and I mean, I just got floored by one of the most beautiful sounding shows I've ever seen. And kind of why I wanted to play this is that I have this thing about, you know, how music and consciousness and these things can actually move mountains when it comes to making things happen on the planet. And I thought this, it was a really neat thing that they have a song called Save Me on one of their albums, and it's actually about Hamlet and Ophelia. But it's got this great screaming chorus about save me, right? And their audience is very intelligent. There's nothing assumed about them being stupid, which I think is where music and the arts in general can fall very badly short. And we don't teach kids about music and whatnot the way that we used to in school. You know, they don't understand that it can be more than the pop garbage that is kind of just generated for your mass consumption. And, you know, I've had a couple of big rants on the record industry, but, you know, here's this band that I don't, you know, Rush was huge in America, you know, like, I remember how all the art rock bands were huge in America, and I'm just, like, wondering, is there too much Middle Eastern influence? Like, you know, these guys are open to everything, and, you know, it goes from very big Zeppelin-y rock to some of the most beautiful multi-instrumentalized acoustic bits, and it's a trio. It's, like, unreal. And here this guy comes walking out on stage, and the audience can see the silhouette of the oud before they see him walking on with it, and they all start to applaud because they know what's coming, right? And, I mean, this is a rock concert. And he sets up the song. He says, look, there's a friend of ours in Canada, and this is their second largest fan base except for home. He says, a friend of ours is about to go under the knife for some very, very serious surgery right about now. And he says, as we play this song, would you please direct your energies towards him? Because we really feel that his soul and his body are under heavy strain. And this is a very special place, Australia, for us. We would like to send some of that love that we captured down here back to this dear friend of ours. And so he plays this beautiful intro of the song on oud. And it turns into almost a mantra. And all of a sudden he just slides into the song. And you have this entire arena just screaming, save me. And at the end of it, in his beautiful baritone voice, he says, thank you, I believe our friend felt that.
Wow.
And you could feel it, man. It was amazing.
Excellent.
You know, and go ahead.
No, go ahead, John.
Well, you know, I've talked about where I think that there is a thing about global consciousness. And a lot of where this world has gone wrong is that we got convinced of a consciousness and believing the stories that we tell ourselves about the way our history was that allows us to continue on making the same mistakes. And has, you know, and you know, part of it was Reagan and the kitchen cabinets and all that kind of stuff, you know, working from the ground up and getting people to believe something that played one way but really, really just hit another reality. And I think, and it's one of these things, you know, we've had the man is basically good or evil thing. And I'd said to you, I think it was last week we had this chat. And I said that I actually think that it's that the global consciousness has been shifted in a very, very bad way, very, very slowly and very, very effectively. And I think that hopefully we're pushing back to the point where we'll kick over that number where it becomes part of the common consciousness on how we're supposed to be treating each other. Because it really, really does come down to a human aspect. One of the things that I love about the way the Head On Radio Network news is worded, reminding us at every moment that these deaths are humans. I love Bob's bit about mothers' sons dying in Iraq, because that's the reality. That is the reality.
It absolutely is the reality, John. And, you know, the problem is, you know, one of the problems, there's so many of them, is that we are allowing all of the news and most of all the conversation to be framed by these folks. And we even end up adopting their terminology, you know, in our everyday conversation, such as insurgents.
Yeah.
What, you know what? One man's insurgent is another man's freedom fighter. And actually, one man's insurgent could be just another man's civilian who is trying to protect his family.
Well, and remember, you know, you listened to the Fisk lecture last week where he even said on 9/11 when he was on another plane and was actually translating more information on his satellite phone to the pilots of the plane that he was on than they were able to get from the station, or, you know, from control or whatever. He was finding himself, Robert Fisk, one of the most educated, open men who probably has worked harder to communicate with people in difficult situations than virtually anyone on this planet that we could name, suddenly found himself racially profiling somebody. Yeah. 14 people, in fact, in first class.
Right.
And it's all by the framing.
Well, you know, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it is all by the frame. I mean, you know, here in Greensboro, back in on January 31st, you know, there was a number of guys who were arrested, and actually, at some point, I'll give you guys an update on that. But they were, you know, they were profiling this guy who was taping these cars. We have been conditioned to react to, you know, strange occurrences like someone taping license tags or bridges or buildings, you know, with fear. We're taught to react with fear, and we're taught to say there's got to be something wrong with this. You know, this person has to be, especially if they have brown skin and dark hair. you know what I'm saying, John?
I tell you, man, not to keep kind of harping on pop culture, but last night Gail and I saw Crash.
Great movie. Fantastic movie.
Oh, my. This so applies. I mean, like, just how everything was interconnected, and I'm telling you, my heart stopped that scene with the locksmith and his little girl, man. I seriously thought I was going to lose it. That film really says a lot about this. It's... We've convinced ourselves that we're supposed to be afraid of all these people that are different from us. And you see even the minorities in America. And I have to say that movie was so unbelievably accurate to what I remember. It really is. And I know it's focused. And I know not everyone is that way. But each one of those situations was a perfect example of why America still has a lot to come to terms with when it comes to its relations with its minorities. But I mean, even that's a joke. Last time I checked, I think it's very, very soon going to become a time where America's predominant language is actually Spanish. And I still remember that Howie Mandel stand-up bit where he said he'll never forget his mother used to stand in elevators amongst a bunch of like American businessmen, and she'd say, "You live in America, speak Spanish," you know, and I'm sorry, I used to go down to Union City, New Jersey, where it was suddenly a different place. Everything, there was a different culture. The primary language in the stores wasn't English. Everybody spoke English, right? And it wasn't any of that issue, but it was about the fact that it was really simple. Union City is a place where a whole bunch of Cubans came at once and basically moved their culture, bang, to this spot in America, and they became a microcosm.
Well, that's happening. Yeah, just not to deviate, but that is here in North Carolina. We are experiencing a lot of the same thing. I think North Carolina is number 3 in the nation for having undocumented immigrants. I refuse to call them illegal immigrants.
Me too, because most of them are working
for that if they want. Yeah. But here, there's a little town. I think it's Pittsboro. Or is it Liberty? It's one of these little cities, one of these little towns that's right here by Greensboro. It's about 20 minutes away from Greensboro, that had such an influx of undocumented immigrants that they took over the. I mean, they literally took over the town. There were so many that the town's population tripled in size, and the indigenous, you know, if you want to call them that, white population of this
yeah,
city,
yeah, indigenous
of this
my
town,
butt.
Yeah, we're completely overwhelmed, and we're actually put into the minority. So, you know, this is still happening. And I think bottom line, John, is that, you know, the age-old law of migration, which is, you know, you go where the resources are, is still in effect. People are going to go, I believe, where the resources are. And whether it's Union, New Jersey in the 70s and 80s, or Pittsboro, North Carolina in the 21st century,
It's still happening. And, you know, but, you know, we bounced all over the place in this topic tonight, in this section here.
Well, but you know, but that, again, this is one of the things when I threw that kind of rhetorical question at you last week, I said, what do we do to stay on topic but yet keep the context? Because, I mean, we went all these places completely in context.
Sure.
You know, it is all over the place because, unfortunately, our society is bloody all over the place at the moment. I mean, this whole planet's all over the place as far as I'm concerned, and it's getting more and more nutty by the week. You know, it was very interesting when Condi was here to watch her and Alexander Downer, our foreign minister, have their little exchanges because China's a little bit of an issue when it comes to that because, well, Australia's got a pretty friendly relationship with China due to the fact that, well, it's part of kind of the region. And Condi was kind of leaning on the, oh, well, you know, we'd rather they were, but we have challenging fights ahead. And it was all, and the whole next 5, 6, 7 lines she said, whatever it was all fearmonger, 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 with nothing behind it.
Right.
And it was all about bogus allies.
The reality is that, you know, we have choices. You know, we have choices today. And those choices are, number one, we can live in fear. Or, number two, we don't have to live in fear. You know, it amazes me. These people keep pushing this fear line. And for a while, people were buying it. But I think finally people are going, wait a minute. This whole living in fear crap for the last 5 years is not the way people want to live. And, you know, and because of that, you know, we have people that are, you know, we've had more instances of, you know, civilian PTSD in the last 5 years than ever before. You know, mental illness is at an all-time high. And, you know, they're trying to drive us crazy, John.
As they completely cut funding for mental health initiatives.
Yes. Go ahead.
No. You just reminded me of did you see the JMAC footage that autistic kid?
I did not.
Oh my God, man! If this young boy, high school student, advanced functioning autistic, right, was basically like the ball boy for his high school basketball team, right? And Bush had a photo op with him. This is kind of what the point of the whole thing was. But if you could watch this footage, what happened was the coach actually said on the last game, everyone loved this kid so much, they told him to suit up. He was going to get to play, right? He got on there, missed 2 layups, and then after that, proceeded to sink 6 3-pointers in a real game against a real opponent and ended up winning the game for his team. The whole school went absolutely batshit, and if you could watch that footage and not get a tear in your eye, you're dead, to use Mike Malloy's words. Crooks and Liars has that video, by the way, and Bruce, you have to see it. And what does Bush do? Use the kid in a photo op to say how great he was. Meanwhile, at the same time, all this money for mental health research has just gone absolutely out the window. It doesn't exist anymore. So we have the photo op while in the back, Orwellian, chop it off.
You know,
I'm okay. Hey now, man, I'm better now. Would you like to take us out, Bruce?
You're listening to For the State Radio. My good friend John Fox down there in Australia, and I'm up here in North Carolina in the USA. If you want to get in on the program, please dial 1-877-443-2366. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be right back. We're in it all together. See how they run like pigs from a gun. See how they fly. I'm crying.
I'm just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Because mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. Ah, I love little feet, Bruce.
You got a bruise in a little bit later, I believe, don't you?
Yeah, I like big feet too, but you know, hey.
I think that's more of a personal thing, man. I think that, that falls in the category of way too much information.
I probably shouldn't have said that on air. Okay,
what's
okay.
The phone
for everyone
number,
who's listening,
Bruce?
I really don't have like a foot fetish or anything. I just thought that it was a cool joke. Yeah, if you want to get
back
on the program,
backpedal.
You know. we're not going to talk about my fetishes, John. This is not Bruce's fetish night, okay? All right. If you want to get on the program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. Alternatively, if you like the letters, that's 1-877, the number 4, head on. And you can also send us email if you want to do that by sending it to either myself, Bruce, at fourthestateradio.com, or to my good friend down there, John.
JON@fourthestateradio.com.
So and John, yeah, we got the show is still rocking forward. What have you got for us?
No doubt. So we went off on a million tangents before, and you know, before we end up going into, you know, the hour break again before we get into the big hour three. earlier, I got to fix that cough button. Earlier, I was saying that I had some audio, and I just wanted to show you what. You know, you got to love the Sydney Left. There's something just really, really good about them, because when they get out, it was such a fun day out there yesterday. Bruce, would you do me a favor? There's a clip there called Three Stooges, I do believe. and this
Bruce,
is...
Bruce or Bob?
Bob, sorry. Bobby, sorry. Down there, our wonderful producer in West Virginia. There's a clip there called Three Stooges, and if you get that queued up, this was Shirley Lomas, okay? And I believe Shirley might even be T.J. Hickey's mom. And T.J. Hickey was a young boy who was basically, depending on which side of the fence you stand on, and Gail and I lived a block away from them, was basically murdered by the New South Wales police. But anyway, she was one of the Aboriginal leaders that came down, or members of the community, to, one, when you do things down here, if you respect the original people who lived here, you give thanks to the local tribe whose land you are having the meeting on. And so, but this just gives you a taste, and she actually talks about Condoleezza Rice. Do you have that that audio there, Bob?
On the 24th of April, the day before Anzac Day, it marks the beginning of the end of the Three Stooges, Howard, Bush and Blair. And Bin Laden can go too, because we're going to take on our own, and he'd better make sure that he does the right thing in his country. I want to say something to our brothers and sisters in the Middle East. Salaam alaikum, and peace be with everyone. One thing that I had the pleasure of going down and attending the Condoleezza Rice rally, and let me tell you, the bongo drummer was pretty good, except for Piers Ackerman, chief racist writer for the John Howard cheer squad, the Daily Telegraph. I suggest that he lose some weight if he doesn't want to run into everybody.
Now, this is a woman who has, lost her son, and actually two of the police involved were actually there to help maintain the march yesterday, which one of the family pointed out to me. But not that there were any issues there. Actually, the whole march was really, really great. And the whole thing with the they went out there, and there were a few arrests at the Condi thing. People were down there in droves. We saw some really, really happy faces down there wanting to again say, and I wish I had had enough time to do all the editing that I wanted to do, because there was this great speech. One of the speakers that was down there was one of the leaders of the Catholic Church here, and it was a female minister whose name I was not able to catch. Talked about, she marched in the original pre-war march, right? You know, the one that everybody marched in. I believe you marched in it. You know, and she says, and we were right then, and we're right now, and we're marching here on the third anniversary of the occupation to say that we were right then, we are right now, and we need to get these troops out, because it's only because we're still in there that the Iraqi people continue to suffer in the way that they do. I mean, you know, this is our mess, and we're never going to be, we can't fix this up. It's time to go walking out with our tail between our legs and let the members of that part of the world who have actually have an interest in what happens to their neighbors, you know, take an active role. I think it's the only way that we're going to be able to stop what's going on. And it was really good to see on a not too hot day what I would guess would be somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 who came down, marched. There were plenty of speakers. And this rapper who I'm really, really hoping to get on next week. I spoke with her today. Her name is Jacqueline Extreme. And I'm telling you, there's some just really, really, really great lyric in there that, I mean, I just learned a heap listening to about 3 or 4 of her tunes. And so I'm going to be hooking up with her a little bit later this week for talk in a coffee shop and grab a copy of that CD of hers. And what when I rang her today, what again made me think how cool this was is she was doing some sort of music project with kids. So anyway, we're coming up on the end of the hour. Bruce Birch is on the other side, feeling a bit hurt, but killing out by school. There are holes in the dimensions between the haves and who have nots. There's a
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing, the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. If they were pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were pro-life, if they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war.
Bottom line. Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Hi, this is Guy James. Remember me? As many of you know, I got the boot from the radio stations that carried my show a while back because I got a little too controversial for them to handle. Well, I'm back now, but I'll be doing my show 5 days a week from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time starting on March 20th. You can join us at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org. And if you like hard-hitting, thought-provoking, entertaining radio, then join us starting March 20th at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org for the new Guy James Show.
Head on Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid. People around the world marked the third wretched anniversary of George Bush's war against the people of Iraq Saturday by taking to the streets. As many as 100,000 people showed up in London to demand that the United Kingdom remove its troops from Bush's illegal war. Protests were also held in Baghdad, Basra, New York, Toronto, Tokyo, Rome, Madrid, and Sydney. Bush says if he had it to do all over again, he'd still attack Iraq on false pretenses. In his weekly radio address Saturday, Bush restated the same old song and dance.
The decision by the United States and our coalition partners to remove Saddam Hussein from power was a difficult decision, and it was the right decision. America and the world are safer today without Saddam Hussein in power. He is no longer oppressing the Iraqi people, sponsoring terror, and threatening the world.
Of course, way back in 2001, we already knew Saddam was no threat to the world. Colin Powell, Bush's own hand-picked Secretary of State, said so.
He has not developed any significant capability with respect to weapons of mass destruction. He is unable to project conventional power against his neighbors.
Despite Bush's happy talk, the civil war continues unabated in Iraq. The bodies of 22 human beings were found in and around Baghdad. They had been shot in the head. Many showed signs of torture. More than 100,000 civilians, most of them women and children, have died because of George Bush. Three more American mothers' sons also died in Iraq Saturday. The soldiers were killed near Tikrit. Two were killed in an indirect fire attack. The third was shot. With Bush's poll numbers continuing to plummet, the White House ratcheted up the fear factor again Saturday. Following the failure of Thursday's hot dog of doom scheme, cabinet secretaries held a fantasy meeting that pretended some evildoer had unleashed smallpox in the United States. Low-level cabinet secretaries spent 4 hours in a meeting at the Eisenhower office building to see what they would do if such an attack was to take place. A White House spokesman later admitted there is no evidence that any such attack is likely to happen. U.S. Navy vessels skirmished with suspected pirates on Saturday. The cruiser and destroyer exchanged gunfire with small boats off the Somali coast, a region known for piracy. Working people in France are flexing their muscles. A new law that will make it easier to fire younger workers is drawing the anger of the French working class. As usual, the government has called out police to quell student and union demonstrations against the new rules. The demonstrations all across France have succeeded in shutting down two-thirds of the country's universities. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Lots of experts talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. How you doing? I'm John Prime. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math or their English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. There you'll find kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff such as fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy, just waiting to be explored by young minds. So don't let it go to waste. Support your school music program. Thank you.
A PSA brought to you by MEMC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
It's time for another phony baloney journalist story from the Bush administration. The Washington Post reported Saturday that the White House says it is disciplining two people for pretending to be reporters in advance of a presidential visit to the Gulf Coast. The two people questioned a Mississippi couple about the destruction of their home, telling the people they were from Fox News. The pair later told Elaine and Jerry Akins that they were really Secret Service agents. The Secret Service has said they were phony agents, too. Condoleezza Rice is traveling again. This time, the Secretary of State is in Pago Pago in the American Samoas. America's fashion plate diplomat is trying to strong-arm the Japanese into lifting their ban on U.S. beef. The Japanese government instituted that ban following the discovery of mad cow disease in the U.S. Another case of mad cow was reported in Alabama just last week. In addition, the USDA has announced plans to reduce the number of cows tested for the disease. The Japanese government is especially nervous because an American company negligently shipped bovine spinal material in a batch of meat to Japan this past January. Ireland's prime minister doesn't like torture. Bertie Ahern used a St. Patrick's Day visit with George Bush to drive that message home. Ahern told Bush Friday that he has, quote, concern about CIA flights, unquote, that may have gone through Irish airspace or originated in Ireland. The CIA has used secret flights to and from a number of European countries to take suspects to and from its secret torture centers. The fashion world is in mourning. Oleg Cassini, one of the giants of haute couture, died Saturday. Cassini came to America in 1936, designed costumes for Hollywood, and eventually helped craft the image of First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy. Oleg Cassini was 92 years old. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Back on Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch. If you want to get in on the program, we would love for you to call in 1-877-443-2366. John, you still with me?
Yeah, man. I actually started bringing it in. I heard you saying the exact same thing that I was saying, coming right back at me instantaneously, and I went, okay, I'll just be quiet.
I didn't hear you. Wow, that's kind of weird.
That's all right, but hey, man, nice cover. It was all good. It's all good. So anyway, man, I think I've had enough of a rant fest for a while. So I'm gonna let the news do a little bit of ranting for me. How's that?
Sounds great.
Okay. One of the things that Gail posted on our blog, 12thharmonic.com, this week. She writes about a sharp rise in CO2 levels recorded, and I have to always put a red flag up every week, once a week, about how dire things are with this environment, that actually it should be priority number one if we weren't just distracted by wars. Maybe the neocons aren't insane after all. It's just the lack of oxygen getting to their brains. Perhaps they're just the most vulnerable to oxygen deprivation, but she gets into the BBC article. It says, U.S. climate scientists have recorded a significant rise in the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, pushing it to a new record level. BBC News has learned the latest data shows CO2 levels now stand at 381 parts per million, 100 parts per million above the pre-industrial average. The research indicates that 2005 saw one of the biggest increases on record, a rise of 2.6 parts per million. The figures are seen as a benchmark for climate scientists around the globe. So just so no one forgets that... We have a situation, you know, with this environment that we just continue to abuse. And as good science is kept out of schools and out of the media, you have to look at these kind of studies to see that no matter what kind of Orwellian policies are being put through, the truth is that it's getting worse.
Well, you know, we had that story recently about the fact that the ice in the Arctic is not rebuilding over the winter for the second straight year in a row.
Oh, and not only that, the biggest glacier is moving and accelerating, and there was that whole thing about that they're kind of figuring out that there's that layer of water between the actual glacier and the dry land, and as the whole thing melts, it's lubricating it as it's sliding off into the sea.
Yeah. You know, so... Yeah. I don't want to be all doom and gloom, but the reality is it's all the indications are there that we're at a place we can't turn back from, and that's scary. That is absolutely scary. And you know what? I think these right wing zealots in charge in the White House could care less. I think that they think that that this is the way it's supposed to happen because the Bible said so.
Yeah, those that think eat the place up, it's yours to rape because God's going to take us all away when it all comes crumbling down. To allow these people to somehow be allowed unfettered access to the controls of our governments just really, really makes me quiver in me boots.
In your boots?
In me boots.
And the thing is the other thing, too, is that, how many countries have signed on to Kyoto, John, besides the United States and Australia?
Every country. I think basically everybody.
Everybody except for the U.S. and Australia.
Yeah, the U.S. and Australia. And what was the one asking my local producer here? What was the one with it was America and Somalia were the only ones that hadn't signed on to. Oh, the UN Conventions of the Rights of a Child.
Okay. Yes, it amazes me. It amazes me that here we are, we're supposed to be the shining light for the world, for democracy and technical advance and the economy and, all this wonderful things. But you know what? We will not. We refuse to, as a country, at least our leadership right now, refuses to sign on to global anything that has to do with a global treaty. And I think what the bottom line is that we want to have our cake and eat it too. And you know what? It's not going to work. It's just not going to work because
no, it's not working because the cake is getting rotten.
It is, absolutely. You know what I heard today?
What did you hear?
Actually, I heard a lot of different things, but I don't want to shift too far away from that because I think that this is an important, absolutely important topic. But this is just this whole CO2 thing. Is just one more nail. I mean, I think it's very interesting because the Bush administration said there wasn't that all the science about global warming was suspect. Okay.
Yeah, and it wasn't. So, it wasn't Robertson, but who was the other preacher that came out just 2 weeks ago and said that global warming is all the science work of the devil?
Oh yeah, those guys are freaks. They wouldn't know science if it bit them in the ass. But if you're noticing that these worldwide studies are being released weekly now, John.
I think I think there's a reason for that.
I think so too.
I really, really do. And I was just handed this, just going back. Somalia couldn't sign the agreement because they had no legitimate government. So basically, the only country that didn't sign that right to the child thing is basically the United States. So, sorry, I had to pass that on. 192 countries have signed it.
Well, we want to be able to torture, you know. Even children. That's just scary. That's just downright scary.
You know, I mean, seriously, that has to leave you speechless. Has to leave you speechless. And I'm sorry to have derailed you from where you were going, and I hope you can get yourself back on track. But I just had to tell you that, because that just, I'm sorry. Why every American should be lobbying and ringing up and going, how the hell can you save face? Sorry, how can you save face and not sign something like this?
I don't know. John Bolton is one sick bastard. That's
Captain Kangaroo's evil twin.
No doubt. No doubt. You're absolutely, yeah. No doubt. You know, I wanted to get all, you know, we only got a couple minutes left, but I did want to sort of mention this, and that this is another sort of, gosh, all of our stories are being a little bit down tonight, but here's another one, and this is by the Committee to Protect Journalists. They said on Friday that a study compiled for the third anniversary of the war in Iraq has stated that murder has overtaken war as the leading killer of journalists in Iraq. Yes. Crossfire and other acts of war previously had been considered the leading cause of death of journalists and media support workers in Iraq, but the dangers have shifted. In the past 10 days alone, suspected insurgents have murdered 3 Iraqi journalists and 1 media support worker, raising the death toll to 67 journalists and 24 media support workers killed since the war began on March 20th, 2003. 67 journalists, John.
Okay, man. Again, this is the kind of thing that really, really, really scares the bejesus out of me. And it just really goes to show that they don't want the debate. They don't want the story. They want to control the language. You know, if you refer to the wall in Palestine as the wall instead of the fence, you're an anti-Semite. You know, I'm speechless when I lived or live in a place that seems to think that they're standing some sort of high ground by not being a part of world conventions that really, really, I don't understand it, Bruce. I really, really wish I could make it play, but it just doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, you know, the reality is that they don't, you know, that the government doesn't want this truth to come out in any way, shape, or form about what's going on over there. You know, with staged, we have revealed a whole lot of stuff on this radio program that'll never make it to the mainstream media. You know why? Because if they did, people would die. Okay, and I hate to put it that way, and that sounds really extreme, but you know, all the stories about the U.S. and the Brits supposedly ceding the civil war over there, which it is. It's not sectarian violence, folks. This is civil war that's going on over there.
Yeah, it is civil war. And I've actually got a couple of things that, before the end of the show, I hope to mention about media not having the discussion. One of them being that a parody website, and I believe the guy's name is it Neville? Is the guy's name. John Howard parody site, and the Howard government pressured the provider to shut down the domain.
Oh, wow. Well, we are going to be going out here just in a moment, but you are listening to Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch. That's John Fox. 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
Neath the refinery's glow, I wear the great black river's pole. license registration.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio, because I know the pieces fit, Bruce.
Okay, is that the name of the song?
Yeah, I know the pieces fit, but I watched them wash away. A really, really interesting lyric to read. That's Tool there from Lateralis. Anyway. I believe it's Occupation Watch time, a little later than normal, but... what do you have for us on the Deadometer this week, mate?
We have a 23:17 on the Deadometer, if you want to call it that. Thank you, LePro. John, take it for a second, please.
No worries, man. I'm very, 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 very sorry. I thought you had something there, but I'll tell you. One of the things that was also being talked about when Condoleezza Rice was down here is that suddenly they're looking for accountability and whatnot and clarity from China regarding their military buildup. And I sometimes just wonder how I don't know what Gail was trying to mouth to me there, but I reckon that it was very sarcastic and very English. But, you know, why is it that, again, this falls into the old opposite world thing where, you know, they're calling for accountability and clarity from China, yet the American public has no idea what the bloody, you know, Gail was saying calling the kettle black kind of situation. You know, we don't know anything. The American government doesn't even know what the war is costing because they're not allowed to know. It's not even public knowledge. So, I mean, it's just insane, you know, Bruce, that, you know, there was that reference about, you know, increase in human rights. And, you know, it's like, and this is coming from who? And this is, you know, I'm supposed to believe you on this when you won't be held accountable for anything.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. They, you know, the government at this point is basically an entity upon itself with no check and balance. And, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do. They got a program. They're going to put it in place, and we could march all day long. It doesn't matter to them at all. And I know that's very cynical, but, you know, we have to do what we have to do. And at some point, the marching may evolve into something else. We'll see. But I did want to, you know, get back to... you know, thank you for covering there for a second, John, while we worked out some technical difficulties.
No worries, man.
The since the war began on the 19th of 2003, which would be tomorrow, 2,317 U.S. soldiers have died. And since mission accomplished, May the 1st, 2003, that would be 2,180. Have died. And of course, who knows how many Iraqis have died, you know, anywhere from 100,000 to as much as 150,000, perhaps. You know, that, and there's been numbers that I've seen that put it even higher than that. So, you know, it really is quite unreal, the human cost of this conflict, of this invasion and occupation. But there's another cost that is being bandied about that I wanted to cover before we get off to the rest of the show, and that is that this is out of MSNBC. They are predicting that the cost of the Iraq war could surpass $1 trillion. So that $200 billion price tag that John Kerry was talking about back before the election of 2004 really wasn't a realistic number after all, was it? It was only a fifth.
Of course not.
Of what the real cost is going to be as far as in dollars. And the interesting thing about this article is that it states very clearly that economists, you know, while the military planners say, well, we really don't know how much it's going to cost, the economists, you know, can sit down and, you know, I mean, they can tell you exactly how much it's going to cost based on how many soldiers are sent into the field, or how many, based on the deployment, where it's going to be. They can sit down and give you a cost almost down to the dollar of exactly what, you know, an estimate of what it would cost to run this war. So, you know, when these folks in Washington sit around and talk about how they don't know how much it's going to cost, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's the knowns, and then there's the unknown knowns, and then there's the knowns, unknowns, Yeah, it's like, na-na-na, hey, goodbye. You know, when you hear Rumsfeld do the verbal, God, he's like Yogi Berra, the verbal tap dance.
Diarrhea.
You know that, here we go, that, you know, it's all about lies. It's all about smoke and mirrors. Now, the tab in this war is growing by $200 million each and every day. Every day. $200 million every day.
And not to mention the human cost, which there is no price tag on. And
absolutely not. There's no price tag on that. And that's, and you know, and not even to mention the cost to our relations with the Muslim world for generations to come. You know? It's going to take, you know, this could never, this may never get repaired.
Might not, man. Might not. There's the music, buddy.
Indeed there is. Okay, well, this is Bruce Birch, and that's John Fox. This is Fourth Estate Radio. Get on the program with us. 1-877-443-2366. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be right back.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told you that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, sesame, flour, flax, hemp seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel. Not only their feed, small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more eco-wrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
One of the many things people expect schools to do these days is inspire students to be creative. Hello, I am Richard Thompson. Educators and psychologists agree. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math and English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. Kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff like fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy, just waiting to be explored by young minds. Don't let it go to waste. Please support your school music program.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, part of a sound education.
Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and here's one of my recent rants on George Bush.
He's living an opposite world. It's like everything that he says, it's just completely the opposite to reality. Okay, he says that the low level of public support for his policies in Iraq showed that the public had been distracted from achievements made in that country by images of violence on the news. So he's blaming the news. He's blaming the news for reporting the freaking truth. Rather than his propaganda, which he likes to catapult. All right. Well, I just wanted to deviate from the Alito stuff because I think it's pretty important to remember how stupid the president is. You know, because you know we need to know how stupid he is, right?
And so, in my speech to the nation, whatever you want to call it, speech to the nation. I asked Americans to give 4,000 years, 4,000 hours over the next, of the rest of your life, of service to America. That's what I asked. I said, 4,000 hours.
Join me, Bruce Birch, every Sunday evening, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, as we point out the stupidity of the Bush regime. AllThingsReconsidered.org.
She don't want me around. She said she's tired of watching me fall down.
That's the time of the show that I feel like I'm about to fall down. I bet Bruce is ready to fall down over there, aren't you?
And she's up in the corner right now. It's okay. I'll be all right. It's okay. I've got the Earl Grey, you know,
intravenous T-link going on there. And,
well, good on you, man. Good on you, man. That's
what keeping you... me. It's keeping me moving. John, I understand we
right
do
on,
have
right
a...
Right on. So
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
we were both going the same place. I do believe we have a couple of callers on the line. I believe we have Arbor Tender giving us a ring as usual. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing tonight?
We're rocking along tonight. We're rocking along tonight. Been kind of a full thing. I've had a rant or two. What brings you by this week?
Well, let's see. We got a bunch of stuff going on in California. I guess I just stepped in as they were asking in the room if anybody went to any of the protests today, and I happen to know that while I didn't go to any protest, I did take part in the support of a congressional campaign here in California while the congressional candidate headed off to a peace march today at Ventura, downtown Ventura. They had a march from Mission Park up to a rally at Plaza Park today from 12:30 to 2:30, and it was, from what I gather, it was a pretty great event. There were about 600 people there, and again, that shows a pretty strong progressive spirit in Ventura County, where I have been for the last week. Getting to know the congressional candidate in the 24th district, who turns out to be a pretty interesting cat, I have to share with you. And I kind of, if you'll let me, I just kind of wanted to bring, you know, down to earth for a second what I'm, you know, it's so easy to get sort of distastefully shaped in your mind about what's going on in the greater planet in various countries today. But there's also stuff going on in individual families and homes that is, you know, takes an awful lot of focus. And I'm starting to see why it's really difficult for people to focus on events that are so far away from us, because there's so much going on right locally in homes and communities for individuals right now. It's just as stressful on the you know, narrow scale as it is on the broad scale. And anyway, some of the things that I've been kind of faced with the last few days has been kind of elder care issues and you know, matters of, you know, families' interactions with their elders and the ways that they relate to them as they grow older and you know, the ways that communities rise or don't rise in support of the seniors in their communities and what happens to seniors when they don't rise to that challenge. And it's, I just kind of wanted to share, if I could, a little love for the elders in our communities who are not being given the respect that they're due in many cases. And I've had an opportunity to meet a very dear friend of Michael Stettler's, who's our congressional candidate here in the 24th district in California. And he's also, in addition to being really enthusiastically moving forward with a Democratic campaign, he's also responsible for looking after a really special woman who's she's this 92-year-old woman who's born in 1913 and has seen really a lot of life and is one of the most joyous people I've ever met. And this woman has been triumphantly moving through a period in her life where her children have, you know, sort of disconnected with her as anything other than a potential source of an inheritance. And it's a really distressing situation. And I know that happens for a lot of people. And I want to strongly advocate for those among us who got out today and had an opportunity to participate in the peace march to the extent possible to find ways to bring that peace and that regime change that you seek as close to home as possible, just as close to home as it can possibly be brought. And I want to say that I'm watching Mr. Stettler demonstrate that sort of an attitude toward the people in his life right now, and I just wanted to share that sentiment with the audience, and thanks for letting me rant on, man.
No problem, our pretender. Thank you for calling us on all things, on For the State Radio tonight.
Whoops.
Yep. Almost did a whoops there, didn't I?
That's all right, man.
Hey, you guys have a good night.
Okay.
Thank you, darling. Thanks for ringing up.
All right,
thanks for bringing in. I also understand that we have another caller on line two, our good friend Peter from Tallahassee, Florida. Peter, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good this evening, Bruce. It's so nice to talk to you.
Well, John, we love talking to you, man.
Be careful, mate. You never know what you could say. It could become a promo.
Oh, my God. Yes, I do not. I'm going to keep it non-promo mode tonight. You know, you were talking a little while ago, Bruce, about Bolton and our standing in the world and the way the countries regard us. And I'm not sure if you went on to point out that we've fallen so far in esteem and regard throughout the world dramatically. And Bolton, of course, is a huge part of that. You know, in 2000, I think the world was ready to forgive us because of the Bush being president. I think they were ready to forgive us because I think they caught on to the fact that he was not elected, that the elections were stolen. And then, you know, 2004 rolled around, and he was elected again, but there was, I don't think, as much information out there about the stolen elections, at least in the worldwide level. I think that they truly think that we've actually elected the man the second time around. And I just wanted to say that I think that it's absolutely critical, God willing, that the country is taken back by more rational minds, that one of the points that gets out on a worldwide level is the level that is the stolen elections that happened in 2004 also, what happened in Ohio. And I think the world already knows that, you know, the Supreme Court, voted him in, he was installed by the Supreme Court in 2000. But in 2004, they think we actually elected this SOB. And I think that that would go a long way toward mending things. Of course, we've done some awful things on this planet. What we've done in Iraq is inexcusable, and that will be many, many, many years, if ever, to recover from. But I'm hoping that whoever is elected to replace this regime takes the steps to begin pointing out what happened in Ohio and what happened in our voting system here, and what's been substituted for real voting, these electronic machines. You know, just recently, I think it's fairly new news in North Carolina, Bruce, there were over 1,000 memory cards that failed.
Yes. Yeah.
These memory cards failed on account of dead batteries, but in many cases, when the batteries were replaced, the cards still were not able to read data. Thousands and thousands of votes were lost.
Well, no, actually, just let me correct you on that.
Thank you.
Because I read the same story. Election Systems and Software is the only vendor that has been approved by the state of North Carolina to sell voting machines in the state because we have a voter-verified ballot that was passed in our state legislature. So basically, when someone comes into our state to sell election software, they have to place a copy of the software basically with a third party for it to be analyzed by computer scientists to ensure that the software itself is good.
Well, and that's interesting. In Florida, though, Diebold was accused of making illegal patches after the certification.
I wouldn't doubt it. And that's one reason why Diebold's not selling in North Carolina yet anyway. But they that also the ballot, you know, also has to be voter verified. So you get a printout of your ballot afterwards, and I think that I'm not sure exactly how all that's going to work, but I do know that there are other safeguards in place.
Well, Florida, now, here in Jeb Bush world, they've added insult to injury. They're going, okay, you can have your paper ballot, but guess what? It can't be counted. They've made it illegal for the paper ballot to be counted by anything but a voting machine. In other words, it's a paper ballot. It scans through an optical scanner. The scanner reads it and records a vote. But it is illegal to read those ballots by using the human eye.
That's just crazy.
In other words, okay, you can have your piece of paper, but it's useless. You run them through the machines again, you get the same results.
Jeb Bushworld, there definitely is an alternate reality down there, Peter.
Well, in many ways, I'm certainly hoping that whoever takes the reins of this country will speak loud and long about the atrocities that have happened in the voting systems here, because.
Yeah.
I truly believe the world thinks that we actually elected him, and at first there was a very bad feeling about the Bush administration. Now it's a bad feeling about all of us. And this is, of course, aside from what we've done in Iraq, that's a separate issue.
Well, I totally agree.
Can I sneak in for a sec, Bruce?
Absolutely.
I got a question for you. Okay, there's all that federal lawsuit stuff going on with the Help America Vote Act, with North Carolina having these safety valves in place. How are you as a state standing? Because the other states are under threat of lawsuit. Is there still like a remaining firewall that you seem to have at the moment?
Firewall, you mean illegal, uncertified systems, and there's no paper trail to verify? Yes. What it seems to be the thrust of the Help America Vote Act here in Florida is simply, now not to diminish it, not to say that this isn't important, but in Florida it seems that the thrust is entirely to do with allowing people who are handicapped to vote more easily.
No. I understand that, but I think my question was more directed towards Bruce about North Carolina, because we know that in Pennsylvania there's federal prosecution being discussed or has already started, but it seems like you guys somehow in North Carolina still have somehow a valve, or am I misreading what you're telling me?
No, the Help America. Okay, the Voter Confidence Act that was passed in North Carolina was passed with the Help America Vote Act in mind when it was passed.
Right.
So essentially, at this point, North Carolina, is working within the guidelines of HAVA, and the individual counties are all, they're all buying this new equipment. So, we are, I guess, in a sense, we're sort of ahead of the game, because we started here in North Carolina. There was an effort started to create a voter verified ballot way like probably 3 years ago. Actually,
right.
I think they started working on this before the 2004 election.
Okay, because Mary, when she was ringing up, was talking. It seems like, yeah.
Pennsylvania, she may be listening. If she is listening, then maybe she can call in and tell us about it. But I think they kind of got started a little bit late up there.
Okay, because it seems like the Help America Vote thing is about also right now, the way that the prosecutions were going, just this is what I was catching, was a way of forcing the machines on districts.
It seems that way to me.
That's what I was getting out of it. And I thought, from what you were telling me, seems that the state initiatives that you have over there, Bruce, are some way, somehow, avoiding you having the litigation that maybe Pennsylvania and maybe down there in Florida where you are, Pete, because it just feels like it's playing out slightly different where you are.
Well, I think that states, there was a deadline on HAVA, okay, and I'm probably going to get corrected on this, but there was a deadline on HAVA, and I think that a lot of places just dragged their feet on it without trying to put a decent check and balance in place. In North Carolina we did that. I know that there are other places that did too.
We're running out of time here. We're just about to run short. So thanks so much, Peter. We're going to have to cut you off.
You're welcome. Just quickly, I want to ask though: did you see the sweater girl picture of what's her face? The former Secretary of State who's running down here.
With the bald guy. Maybe they can do a UAE version of my grandmother is also my lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
colors that you fly.
All right, you're back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and over there is my good friend John Fox. John, are you still with me? He may not be. I think he was going to reconnect. We're having some digital difficulties, but that's okay. We do what we can. Here on Fourth Estate Radio at this time of the program, we try to do all the thank yous and the, you know, wrapping the show up kind of stuff. And I just wanted to say tonight, you know, tonight's show was a little bit dark, and that's okay, because sometimes the darkness has to be brought to light. If everything that these folks do was not brought to light and was not talked about, then you know what? They would just do more. And, you know, they may do more anyway, but they're not, but at least we know about it. John, you back with me?
Yes.
Okay.
Skippy
great.
Even
fantastic.
Slid in. Peter just missed.
Sort of
what was that, Skippy?
I said I
was a liar?
Sort of
well, we knew that. Sorry, go ahead, you were saying.
Skippy the kangaroo, I think, bounced you out of the radio network there, my friend. I don't know what.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It got really, really kind of just chunky there for a second, so we had to reconnect, and it just wasn't a smooth reconnect. Hey, there goes the internet. Speaking of which, we have a fundraiser going on for new equipment to have us that better schmicker, really, really solid connection, so we can bring you this and more progressive, unique programming. And had you done any housekeeping yet there, Bruce?
Not really.
Okay, well, you know, we have to thank, of course, you know, our producer Bob Kincaid. Start with him. He was rocking, had a lot of stuff to do, as he always does. Produces that great newscast that we have. And Ben Birch over at White Rose, throw a dime or better his way, because he keeps us streaming to you.
I was going to say, Bob, I think, has four hands. John.
I reckon he does. I reckon he does. Because, you know,
he's turning knobs, like eight knobs every 5 seconds. It just amazes me, the production.
But
knobs.
You know what's even worse is he has that one virtual knob thing that he has to do, and anyone that plays in with audio and computers and whatnot, the moment you have to do something independently within the computer with, like, a virtual mixer, it just always ends up being a thing where no matter how good you are about staying on top of things, Windows is just going to do things that you didn't tell it to do.
Exactly.
That's a whole other thing. What do you have happening tomorrow on All Things Reconsidered?
Well, I've got a citizen candidate on tomorrow, John, a peace candidate
steady
from
on.
North Carolina. No, actually, this is a different one. This is a lady by the name of Cindy Holmes, who is here in North Carolina, and she is running in the 5th District against Virginia Fox, essentially the northwest part of North Carolina, one of the most conservative areas, and actually she's doing a pretty good job of it thus far. So we're going to have her on tomorrow night and talking about what it means to be, you know, to give of yourself and to make a commitment to activism. So, you know, that's what we try to do every Sunday night on All Things. You know, which, by the way, something that I've decided that we need to do on that show is recreate it. So we're gonna be calling it All Things from now on.
You were saying something to me, but I wasn't sure if that was officially launched yet. So it's official now.
I'm trying. Every now and then I mess up and say the other. Well, you know, we'll get used to it. But I did want to also, you know, thank Peter and our bartender for calling up tonight, and to all the people who are listening to our program. We really, really do appreciate you. WDCX.
Good on you.
Down in Florida, Dade City, Florida, and to Keith Lake at the last radio station over there in eastern North Carolina. Thank you guys for running our program. So, John, you want to take us out, buddy?
Well, you know, yeah. And I want to thank Rodrigo for coming in and giving us an education that we all really, really need. And there's even a rally coming up down here about, you know, hands off Venezuela that I think I'm going to end up going and covering. Surprise, surprise, surprise. But I tell you, man, I get really, really frustrated, you know, as the news gets more and more insane, you know, but it was funny when we got down and hooked up with the guys from Workers Radio Sydney, you know, he was saying, I always sit there and moan and groan, getting out of bed on a Saturday morning to come down to these things, and it takes me forever, and, you know, but I finally get down here, and I'm here 10 minutes, and I'm going, what was I complaining about? You know, you get down there, and it's like, you know, finally, you got something coming back that there are other people that actually have concerns about what's right and what's wrong and will make a stand. And it was just very, very heartening to see all those wonderful faces out there. And, you know, and this is a really, really multinational kind of society here. There was all types down there. It was really something else.
Well, I hear music.
Here we go. There's the music, man. Say good day, Bruce.
Good day, Bruce.
Right on, everybody. Thank you so much for being with Bruce Birch and myself. Don't forget to tune in to All Things tomorrow night, 10 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network. We're on the Head On Radio Network. Tomorrow, Rama and Grace as well. We love you. Be good to one another. We'll see you next week.